Welcome everyone to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thanks for joining us again this week. And per usual, that was Humphreys McGee bringing you into the show, and Dan Mott, of course, our producer, making sure we are all sounding at appropriate levels and sounding nice for the off season. We are going to continue our look around the NFL. It seems to be the right time. It is as quiet as it's going to be on the NFL calendar, but most teams and rosters are set. And again, it's just a little quiet time before we get to training camp. So we're not going to waste a lot of time today. I have a very special guest. I can't really call him a guest because he's on the show frequently, but he is our Bears purveyor of knowledge, our expert here, Hub Arkish, our fearless leader at Pro Football Weekly, and also I think the senior member of the Bears beat. Hub, how you doing today?
I'm so senior on the Bears beat, there's nobody within 15, 20 years of me at this point, so I'm feeling that. But other than that, it's all good. It's still a lot of fun, and great to be around just after the 4th of July.
Yeah, no question about it. We hope everyone did enjoy the holiday, had a safe, happy 4th. And again, we're pleased that you are joining us. And Hub may be the senior member on the Bears beat, but the emphasis for Ryan Pace, the youngest general manager in football and the Bears, has, of course, been getting younger this offseason. Before we kind of talk about some of those moves and what we expect to see in training camp, I just want to ask Hub, we're 1 week out from the franchise tag deadline. Of course, Alshon Jeffrey, one of the handful of franchise members still kind of twisting in the wind, if you will. Hub, have you heard anything differently than what we've been reporting in the past couple weeks? Do you expect a long-term deal to get struck, or are we going to see Alshon play on this tag?
Yeah, I think Alshon Jeffrey getting a long-term deal will be one of the big upsets in the NFL this year if it happens. It's not going to happen. There's no reason for it to happen. You know, you get a lot of strange reporting on this stuff when you get to the quiet time in the summer, and there was a big bubble, if you will, a couple weeks ago, I believe. Pro Football Talk reported that they were talking. Well, all that was they picked it up from some guy at ESPN who's not even on the masthead at ESPN, who goes back to the minicamp where they said, well, there's always conversation. I'm not hearing that they're – I should say I am hearing that they're not any closer to a deal now than they have been at any point. And it's one of those rare situations where it's not really in the Bears' interest to give Jeffrey – what he wants. He hasn't earned what he wants. It's not in Jeffrey's interest to give the Bears a hometown discount. And then what we don't know is if Alshon Jeffrey really wants to be a Bear long term, period. He says he does, but you know, he certainly does his best to not be around the city or the team whenever it's not mandatory. And so I would be shocked at this point from everything I'm hearing if he doesn't end up playing on the tag. And that does make sense. The Bears have still got the fourth most salary cap room of anybody in the NFL, over $20 million. There's no incentive salary cap wise for them to get a deal done. And he has to prove that he can stay on the field for more than the 9 games he played last year, and that he can be productive through all those games, and that him and Kevin White will be a good match.
We did see Alshon Jeffrey make an appearance on Twitter, I believe it was Wednesday night, to welcome the newest member of the Chicago sports scene, Dwayne Wade, to the Bulls. We could fill a whole other podcast, probably several, discussing that move, but I just thought it was interesting to see Alshon kind of embrace at least his current Chicago roots and the arrival of D. Wade. Hub, before we get on to a few other topics, I wonder, how much does Kevin White factor into the whole Alshon Jeffrey decision? And obviously we know less about Kevin White than we do about Jeffrey, but when you spend the number 7 overall pick on a guy who looks an awful lot like Alshon, who looks an awful lot like a number 1, what can he do to maybe sway the Bears one way or the other, assuming there is no deal in the next week?
Yeah, the one comment I can't pass, I mean, Dwayne Wade is a class guy, and I'm delighted to see him in Chicago, but has anybody figured out yet, are the Bulls planning on playing cricket this year, or ping pong, or maybe team golf, because they sure don't have a basketball team? It doesn't make any sense. It's great to see a class guy like Wade come home, but boy, I wish I had a clue what the Bulls were doing. But we're talking football, and we're talking Bears, and particularly Kevin White. And you know, Arthur, we've all seen the same thing. He is a remarkable athlete who has not looked a whole lot like a great wide receiver during the offseason. He is learning the routes. He will occasionally do something spectacular. He has had, I don't want to say lots of drops, but fairly regular drops. That's not something I was expecting. He hasn't really even demonstrated, while running routes, the great speed that we're looking for. And so this is where you always wonder, does this great athleticism, can you make that into a great football player? Sometimes it's yes, sometimes it's no. Don't take this wrong. There's nothing negative about Kevin White. I'm not down on the kid. One of the things that we talked a lot about last year before he got hurt, he was going to need a full year to become become an NFL player anyway, because they just they ran about as far from an NFL offense at West Virginia as you can run. And I talked to Dana Holgorsen about a month after he was drafted, just, you know, interview and asked him. And he said, listen, I think the kid's going to be an all-pro receiver, but in all honesty, he knows about 2.5 of the 9 routes on the tree. You know, he's got to learn how to beat jams. He's got to prove he can win contested balls. There's a lot we haven't seen yet. So I think that it's reasonable to have great hope for him. I go back to that draft in 2015. He fit at number 7 overall. There are other teams that would have taken him there. So nothing negative yet. The unfortunate reality is we just haven't seen anything yet because of the year lost to the stress fracture.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with Hub on this, and I would encourage our listeners to check out profootballweekly.com/Bears. You can still go to chicagofootball.com. It'll redirect you to our Bears page. I actually wrote on Kevin White for Friday. He is number 12 on our Bear Necessities list, the 20 most important Bears to the 2016 season. And what I wrote is a lot like what Hub just said. I believe that Kevin White's route tree is what's really going to appear unrefined early, but I don't think that means he can't make an immediate impact on some of the things that Dowell Loggins is going to want to do the most in this offense, those quick tunnel screens that he was so good on at West Virginia. Certainly you hope he's going to be a red zone weapon right out of the gate, maybe some 50-50 balls. They're going to try and use that speed to stretch the field, but it will be fascinating to see how quickly it takes. One other, you know, idea I explored in the story, Hub, and I wonder if you think this is silly or not. Can Kevin White potentially serve multiple? He's going to wear multiple hats, I think, because the Bears have 2 first-round picks now. Not more in the top 10. We're more scrutinized than, of course, Leonard Floyd at number 9, who the Bears traded into the top 10 to get. From my vantage point, White's going to have an ability to kind of take some of the spotlight off of Leonard Floyd if he's a little bit of a slow developer. There's 2 guys fans and the media are so anxious to see. Do you think there's anything to that at all? I don't think the Bears had that in mind, obviously, when they drafted Leonard Floyd, but it could be kind of perhaps a hidden benefit of having both.
It could be. I think reasonable expectations for Kevin White at this point is that he makes a few big plays the first half of the season and that he's a much better receiver the second half than he is the first half. And you would hope that by week 13, 14, 15, he looks like a guy who's got Pro Bowl potential. Anybody who's expecting to see that early is just kidding themselves. I think the one other thing, though, that the Bears fans better get used to, nobody was happier to see Brandon Marshall leave Chicago than I was. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but it was all about off the field. Right. When you talk about what you got on the field, Brandon Marshall was one of the best blocking wide receivers in the NFL. Right. And up until last year, all the Bears wide receivers blocked well. Now, I didn't see that required as much in Adam Gase's system last year. I don't know what Dahl Loggins is going to expect, but the guy who wasn't much of a blocker was Alshon Jeffrey, and I don't think you can expect him to be much of a blocker. Eddie Royal is too small to do it. Now, I'm not talking – that's not the primary function of a wide receiver.
Right.
But the Bears have to get better running the football. They've got to get some help there. It'll be curious to see how Kevin White does, because he's got the body type for it. He's got the strength and the athleticism, and it would be a big bonus for the Bears if he could be a help in the running game while he's learning to play the wide receiver position. As far as Leonard Floyd, that's a whole different conversation. And it starts with exactly where I started with Kevin White. Does being a great athlete necessarily transpose into being a great football player? Because I look at Leonard Floyd, and for all of his incredible athleticism, I see a guy who should have absolutely dominated at the college level. I don't care if he played in the SEC or not. And he didn't, you know, and we hear about the position switches and this and that. So I think the difference there, though, is because he's going to be playing with Pernell McPhee, with Lamar Houston, with Willie Young, there's going to be a longer rope with him, a longer fuse, so to speak, this year. Now, granted, it's his first year. It's White's second year. But I do think that the Floyd will get the benefit of the doubt throughout the season pretty much no matter what happens.
What we've heard frequently regarding the number 9 pick, Leonard Floyd, is the speed off the edge, the ability to add, juice and quickness and twitch and burst to the pass rush. And those all sound great, and hopefully Floyd's going to provide that. But do you think that perhaps Bears fans are maybe kind of going in the wrong direction? I think I may have mentioned on this podcast, maybe it was on our radio show, I had the good pleasure of talking with Clint Hurt, the Bears outside linebackers coach, earlier in the offseason. A name he said, kind of begrudgingly, I pushed him a little bit on it, was Jamie Collins. And Collins is a heck of a pass rusher, but he does a lot of things equally as well, moving all over the field. I know it's not fair immediately. You're shaking your head. Our listeners can't see that. But do you think the Bears have that type of role in mind with Leonard Floyd, to where maybe he's as valuable moving away from the line of scrimmage, just trying to get in the backfield?
Well, if they do, they could be disappointed. Because the reason you hear so much about the great speed, and it's more than great speed. He can bend the edge a little bit. There's things he can do as a pass rusher, and that's fair. fair. That's real. And whether it's the prospect, whether it's the description, the scouting report, or the excuse, the reality is he did spend enough time playing inside at Georgia that he didn't get a chance to take advantage of that particular ability. However, you can watch every game he played at Georgia. You don't see a physical football player. You don't see the physicality. Jamie Collins is a linebacker who's a really good pass rusher. Leonard Floyd is a pass rusher they're going to try and make a linebacker out of. I don't think, at least with the size and strength that he has right now, there's no way he can do the things he can do. There was a moment, and it was during the rookie camp, and it's just a thing, folks. It's not something to worry about or get excited about, but it just kind of crystallized everything that I'm concerned about with Leonard Floyd. They were doing 11-on-11 timing drills. There's no pads in rookie camp. So they were basically just learning the plays, learning the chase, learning the responsibility. And the offense, and Floyd was lined up, standing up on the right end. The offense threw a quick pitch to Jeremy Langford. He was going around the left end. And so Floyd started coming across the middle, and the rookie guard, Cody Whitehair, stepped out, put both hands up, and gave him half of a two-arm punch, which is an important blocking technique. But it wasn't full speed. It wasn't serious. And Floyd literally bent over backwards and went rolling over his shoulder. I mean, he is too small. I'm sorry, but right now he does not have the bulk that he's going to need to deal with NFL offensive linemen. And you know, this hope that this incredible speed is going to be enough. NFL offensive linemen have seen a few speed rushers. Okay, I mean, that will transpose into a couple sacks, but becoming a great player, becoming a great pass rusher, he's got to add bulk. He's got to learn moves. He's got to add technique. I think he can. I get the texts and the emails and the tweets. Oh, he's anti. I'm not anti anything. I mean, I understand why they took him at 9. I can see what their hopes are. I don't see how it can work if he doesn't get bigger. And when I hear Vic Fangio saying, we're not worried about it. We know he's going to be 230, 235, that's when I start to get a little concerned.
Rest assured, guys, you're not going to stop hearing about the weight thing anytime soon. It's sort of similar to Hronis Grisou last year, and it's why I said at the time, and frankly, I thought that number 9 was too rich for this pick, so I will say I was anti in that spot. But at the time, I said this is as much about entrusting the Bears' strength staff as it is about the coaching staff. So it's going to be fascinating to see it play out. Spending just a couple more quick minutes here with Hub Arkish. He's our executive editor at Pro Football Weekly, content director, also Shaw Media, The Score, The Sun-Times. You can find him all over, including on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. Please find me at Twitter at Arthur Arkish. And Hub, you talked about what you saw at the minicamp from Leonard Floyd. What about the rest of the rookies? Was there one that jumped out at you? Maybe it was Whitehair in the two-hand punch or whatever it may be. But who are you most excited to see here in, 3.5 weeks down in Bourbonnais based off what you saw in the spring?
I like almost everybody 2 through 9. I don't dislike Floyd. I didn't think it was great value at 9. With almost every other pick, I love the value that they got. Whitehair looks like the real deal. He's clearly not a tackle. He played left tackle in school. He's going to be a guard. It's going to take a year or two. It's a big transition, but I think he's going to be a good NFL player. I don't know if he's going to be great. He's not Kyle Long. He's not that kind of athlete. But I think he's going to be good. Jonathan Bullard, I loved in the third round. My only concern with Jonathan Bullard is I think that as a 3 technique, he'd go to the Pro Bowl every year. As a 5 technique in a 30 front, I don't know. He says he can do it. He seems confident. He does look bigger than the roster size suggests. I think he's a great football player. I just got to see if he can convert to that position. The young defensive backs, particularly like Deion Hall at safety, I think he's going to start next to Adrian Amos. I like DeAndre Hall. I think that the comparisons to Peanut Tillman are fair. I thought Howard in the 5th round was a steal. I expect him to be the starting running back by week 7 or week 8. That's no rap on Jeremy Langford. I just, we got a year's worth the tape now, and I'm not sure that Langford is more than a partner or a number 2. And I like Howard a lot, maybe to be the one if he can stay healthy. And then you got this kid Braverman. It's pretty simple with him. He's kind of fun. Can he beat out Eddie Royal? Because that's the only that they're going to play the same position. He's not going to be a 5th or 6th receiver with 280-pound receivers on the team, and I don't see him beating out Eddie Royal. So I expect that's a practice squad year for him. But I think right down from 1 through 9, and through the 7th. Round, they got real good value. I think you're going to see 4 or 5 kids make a difference from this draft. That would be the second year in a row if it happens, and that's pretty good drafting for Ryan Pace.
Eddie Royal, of course, being the guy that Ryan Pace gave $10 million guaranteed to last year. I like a lot of what Pace has done. I didn't like that move so much, but I think that money means that Daniel Braverman nor Mark Mariani is beating out a healthy Eddie Royal, assuming he is. Hub pretty much broke down the whole rookie class for you. Of course, he meant Deion Bush from Miami, who is going to have a strong chance to start against opposite Adrian Amos. And it's DeAndre Hall from Northern Iowa, the long limb Charles Tillman lookalike. I'm excited to see him because I didn't see a whole lot in the spring, but it is unique to see a guy with that kind of length who the Bears are saying maybe is going to be able to compete inside at the nickel. So you want to talk about two opposite body types. Bryce Callahan and DeAndre Hall about is as far apart as they get. And I guess I'll throw in one undrafted because we didn't get there. But I like Tavis Calhoun, the Mississippi State, I believe, cornerback who seemed to just flash consistently making plays on the football. So one more rookie, Ben Broniker, the Harvard undrafted tight end. I guess that's two more rookies to keep an eye on. Hub, I'll leave you with this. We've only got another minute or two. It was Pro Football Weekly this week that reported on Matt Forte saying he feels bad for Jay Cutler because Cutler is under too many watchful and critical eyes as a franchise quarterback. That's a little bit silly. That's what they get paid for is frankly to be scrutinized when they're not doing well and praised when they are. I guess I'll get back more to the football side of things. Do you think we're going to be feeling bad about Jay Cutler's supporting cast? I mean, an offensive line in disarray and a wide receiver core that can't stay healthy this year. Or do you think maybe this offense has a chance to kind of sneakily, you know, over exceed expectations?
It's annoying me terribly. What did I call Deion Bush?
I think you said Deion Hall and then Andre.
DeAndre
or
Hall?
Deion, I don't know what you said.
Whatever.
I just like really correcting like, Hub whenever
only,
I have the chance.
Yeah, only because I really like Deion Bush. I think what Matt Forte is really saying is he feels sorry for Jay Cutler having to play without him, Martellus Bennett, and Brandon Marshall. And it's a fair commentary. I mean, you know, you got Cutler left with these kids. I think it's going to be an interesting season for the Bears. I think the defense can be pretty good. I think it's going to be vastly improved. I don't know if it's a top five or top seven defense, but I think it's a top 10 defense. And what you have to understand, it's more than just the additions. It's more than just the free agency. Love what they did at inside linebacker with Trevathan and Freeman. Vic Fangio runs his 3-4 scheme off his inside linebackers, and they have to be four-down players, and he's got two of them. He's got arguably the best pair of inside backers in the league now. That's what he had in San Francisco with Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis. I'm not saying these guys are Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis, but I think Akiem Hicks is going to be an upgrade. I don't know how good he's going to be. I look for another step forward from Young and maybe Lamar Houston if Pernell McPhee stays healthy. A lot to be excited about. Offensively, and this is what Forte is talking about, you're kidding yourself if you think that offensive line is set yet. I mean, Bobby Massey is obviously a huge upgrade. You know, if you go back a couple of years to what they were doing at right tackle, he's an upgrade over Kyle Long, and having Kyle Long at guard is good. I'm not sold on Leno at left tackle. You don't know if you have a starting guard now with Slauson gone. Whitehair is going to be good, but he's a rookie. We don't know about Ronis Grasu. We don't know where Ted Larson fits in. You've got backups at tight end. And you're not sure that you've got more than one starting wide receiver. You may have three good ones, you know, if Kevin White becomes a player. And I like Eddie Royal a lot if he stays healthy. And then you get to the running back position where, you know, there's skill, there's speed in Langford. Howard is hopeful. And so I think what Forte is really saying is he feels bad for Cutler because the expectations are going to be ramped up again and the talent level has been knocked down a little bit.
And I think what Hub is saying is that despite all the excitement with the Bears this offseason, there are still a lot of questions. I have a lot more questions for Hub. Unfortunately, we are out of time for today. That means you'll just have to keep coming back. We're going to get Hub on this podcast more often. We are breaking down the Bears like no one else at Pro Football Weekly. So for today, I thank you, Hub. And again, we will bring you back very soon. I know you got lots of things on the list, so go start knocking them off. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later.
And we turn now in our NFC North discussion to the division champs, the Minnesota Vikings. And to discuss Minnesota, we are going to bring in Matt Venzel of the Star Tribune, keeping us kind of up to date on what's been going on with the Vikings this offseason. Matt, how are you doing? Thanks for being with us.
I'm doing well.
You know, I guess the place to start here, a lot of excitement. Obviously, the Vikings finally supplant the Packers in the division and, of course, have a brand new shiny stadium they're getting ready to unveil in U.S. Bank Stadium. So a ton of excitement going on with this team, of course. And yet, to me, I can't help but feel like somehow maybe they're still under the radar. It seems I agree with the old adage, a champ is a champ until you knock them off the perch. But it seems like I hear a lot of people saying this is somehow the Packers' division to lose. Am I hearing that wrong? What's it like in Minnesota, and what do you think about this team heading into camp?
No, it does seem like people are still giving the edge to the Packers, and you know what? That's fair. I mean, the Vikings won the division last year. They had a great season. The Packers had a very good season, too. But anytime you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers, I think the Packers are always going to get the nod. But I really do think it's those teams are neck and neck there at the top of the division, and you know, we could potentially see Chicago get into the mix. I'm not so sure about Detroit this year. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely plenty of excitement. And I think the excitement from last year was that it was just the start of it. I think maybe the Vikings arrived ahead of schedule last year. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought they would be a competitive team. I didn't think they would win 11 games and win the division, but you know, this is a team that seemingly has staying power with a good coach, a ton of playmakers on defense, young playmakers, and you know, hopefully, you know, they hope for a quarterback in Bridgewater. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised the Packers are, you know, getting that love. Maybe they've earned it just through longevity, but I do think the Vikings will be right there with them again this year, assuming everyone can stay relatively healthy.
We're chatting with Matt Venzel of the Star Tribune. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Matt Venzel, V-E-N-S-E-L. Before I want to ask you about Mike Zimmer. You mentioned the really good coach and obviously Teddy Bridgewater, two of the biggest factors with the 2016 Vikings. But U.S. Bank Stadium, how does it change your approach getting ready to head into a new stadium? You kind of have a new office, if you will, for the year. Are you already kind of familiar with the surroundings there, or how much of this is going to be new to you?
Well, when I got the job here in Minnesota, they were in the process of tearing down the Metrodome. So I didn't get the joy of covering the Metrodome, but it's grown up over the past almost two and a half years out of the ashes of that. It's just been really fun to watch. I mean, it's just right down the road from me on my way into the city. So, you know, I get to see it every day. I kind of see it develop. I haven't been in there since February. And they were just getting ready to put the turf and all that down. But it looks incredible. I'm excited to see, you know, everything put together. And, you know, it's interesting just that everything has kind of been building to this for the Vikings, not only just the stadium itself, but with this team as well. So, yeah, there's, as you said earlier, there's a lot of excitement and anticipation for this season. And that stadium is a big reason, or one of the big reasons why.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned the Vikings maybe a bit ahead of schedule last season. Obviously, the new stadium also a little bit ahead of schedule. So things seem to be aligning pretty well for this bunch. And I had to laugh. You said you didn't get a lot of the joy out of covering games in the Metrodome. I don't know if there was a lot of joy, at least from my minimal experiences. But anyway, Mike Zimmer quickly establishing himself as, I believe, one of the better NFL coaches, certainly one of the better defensive minds. Do you think he has any concern, and do you have any concern with, despite the Vikings being ahead of schedule and obviously getting the playoffs, winning the division, that was a pretty disappointing finish, obviously, out there to the Seahawks in the freezing temperatures. Any chance that lingers? Do you believe in playoff hangovers? I know you hear Super Bowl hangover more often, but is that anything that Zimmer's going to kind of have to say or not say to hopefully avoid any lingering bad feelings?
I don't think it'll linger. I mean, Zimmer made it pretty clear after the season, and then, you know, when guys walked in the building this spring, that they need to put it behind them, move on. Doesn't really matter how they lost, but to move on and move forward. And he also was quick to say, you know, I mean, many coaches will say this, but quick to kind of downplay what they accomplished overall and said, you know, we got to go out there and do it again to try to avoid complacency. And I think Zimmer's the kind of guy that you don't have to worry about his message going stale quickly.
Right.
You know, I think there were questions about how he would convert to that head coach type role. And yeah, maybe he's not the CEO type that many teams are looking for. But I think he was a great fit in Minnesota. Players really respond to him because he's upfront and honest and lets them know where they stand. And you know, I think this team, you know, as disappointing as how they lost was last season, I know they feel they should have won, and they feel like they were kind of robbed of an opportunity to see how far they can go. So I think there's probably a sense of unfinished business this year, and you know, we'll see if they're poised to take a step forward and or maybe a couple steps forward and be real competitors this year.
I'd imagine there have to be questions about the poise of Blair Walsh when that next big attempt comes up. Obviously, so good for his first several years, and the Vikings go ahead and extend him early. And everyone remembers how the missed field goal turned out against Seattle. Do you think that's one of those situations where you just have to put him in the next high leverage, you know, situation before you really know what's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, we won't know until we know. Until he's in that moment, and you can say what you want about preseason games or early season games or even kicking, you know, a game-winning field goal in the regular season. But, you know, the Vikings just won't really know until they get him into some clutch situations like he was in last year. And, you know, it's telling that they've stood by him. They didn't bring in any competition for him. They've said that they plan on sticking by him, that he's going to get through and all that. So we'll see if he does. You know, he keeps saying that he only dwelled on it for a few weeks and moved on, didn't change his routine in any of that. So we'll see if that worked or not. At, you know, players handle things in different ways. Kicker handles, you know, setbacks like that in different ways. So we'll see how he responds, how it comes out at the end of it.
Chatting with Matt Wentzel of the Star Tribune for a couple more minutes. And Matt, I have to ask you, and it makes perfect sense, obviously, perhaps the reason people want to anoint the Packers once again, although they're not there yet, is because of Aaron Rodgers. Teddy Bridgewater, there's a pretty big disparity, of course, under center. There would be with any quarterback not named Aaron Rodgers in the league for the most part. But did Teddy regress a little bit in year two? In what needs to turn around in year three? What are you most focused on to maybe where we're not asking so many questions about Teddy in kind of the, you know, the uncertainty at the most important position on the field?
I don't think, in terms of his production and his play, I don't think he regressed. I just don't think there was that big visible step forward that, you know, everyone kind of expects to see from a quarterback in his second year. And he avoided turnovers. He made some throws when asked to. He left some plays on the field, particularly on deep balls. But they didn't ask him to do a ton because they had a good defense and they had Adrian Peterson. And I think in some ways that was a little bit different from his rookie year when Adrian wasn't there. And, you know, there were a bunch of games late in the season where they asked him to throw the ball around and he played pretty well. So, you know, he had his moments. He had a big game against the Bears, I think it was, where he had four touchdown passes and ran for one. So we know he's capable of making plays, but, you know, I think this year they want to have him, you know, throw the ball more, but they also want him to, you know, they keep saying let it loose. And by that they mean trusting what he's seeing once he gets to the back of his drop to, you know, be decisive and let it rip and trust his receivers to make plays. And, you know, adding a guy like Laquon Treadwell, the big bodied possession receiver they've been lacking, I think that should encourage him to throw it and take chances a little bit more. And, you know, I don't know how good Bridgewater is going to be. You know, I don't know what his ceiling is, but we've definitely seen what the floor is. And, you know, he's a guy that you can win with. Maybe he's an Alex Smith type where he's going to avoid turnovers, can make some plays, and you pair that guy with a running game and defense and you have a chance. But, you know, we're going to see over these next couple of years, I think they're going to kind of give him more opportunities to throw the ball, and we're going to see how good he can be.
And it's nice now to see, of course, with Laquon Treadwell, the top pick, a Chicago native, and then, of course, Stephon Diggs, who at least in a small spurt showed some pretty bright flashes last year, to see Bridgewater having, you know, some better weapons around him. And what are your expectations for Treadwell initially? I know you said the big-bodied kind of possession receiver, but I think he can do some things after the catch a little bit. I just don't know if he's going to stretch the field. What did you see in Treadwell this spring, and what are reasonable expectations for him right out of the gate?
Treadwell looked pretty polished. He, you know, had a pretty good spring according to the coaching staff. We only got to see him for a few practices, but he looked good when I was watching him. And even though he ran with the second team and it was Charles Johnson back with the first team, I think my expectation is that he's going to start by week one, if not soon thereafter. I mean, he just has something that they lack. You know, he keeps getting compared to Michael Irvin, you know, in large part because he's going to Norv Turner's offense and is going to play that X role. But he really is something that they need in that role. And I think that's going to go a long way. He's going to be, you know, potentially effective right away on those intermediate routes. And, yeah, you said on the short routes, too, he has the ability to make plays after the catch. And the Vikings feel that, you know, he still isn't 100% back, at least in terms of his explosiveness from that gruesome leg injury he suffered a couple of years ago. So they're betting on the fact that last year, even though he was still really productive, it'll miss that, you know, he wasn't all the way back. So I personally think that it's a great fit in this offense, you know, and they obviously thought so too. Who knows if they wanted Josh Dotson or him more, they wouldn't say, but I think either of those guys, even though they're a little bit different, filled the role. And I think Treadwell is going to be a great fit. And he seems like the potential to be a guy that can contribute in a big way right away. I don't know if he's going to get 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, but he definitely can make plays for him right away, I think.
Good stuff. I just have a couple more quick questions for Matt. And again, we appreciate the time from Matt Wenzel at the Star Tribune. And, you know, it's funny because I think this could be potentially the best defense in football this year. And I'm only going to ask one question about him. One more on the offense first. Any surprises that you anticipate with the O-line? Obviously, they go out and get Alex Boone and Andre Smith to compete with Phil Lodeholt. They'll have John Sullivan back. And I don't believe picked up the option on Matt Khalil. So a lot of kind of moving parts and interesting areas of intrigue with this O-line. But do you think it's kind of going to be just a foregone conclusion that Boone and Smith are both going to start, for example? Or is there something you see potentially that maybe others aren't seeing at this point?
It's going to be a wide-open competition, and that's by design. You know, with the addition of Boone and Andre Smith, you know, they're getting Sullivan back, Phil Lodeholt back. They're going to have nine guys who have started at least 16 games in the NFL. So, you know, other than Boone at left guard and probably Matt Khalil at left tackle by default because there's no one really to push him, everything's going to be wide open in those other spots. So, yeah, center is going to be a position to watch with Joe Berger, who played well last year, and Sullivan, who had two back surgeries last year, so you don't know if he's going to be the same player after that. And then, you know, a right tackle – I expect Andre Smith to fend off Phil Lodeholt, who's coming off an Achilles tear, but that's another competition that'll be wide open. And those two are interesting in particular because the guy who loses that battle could potentially be cut, especially at right tackle. So, you know, they brought in Tony Sperano as offensive line coach as well, knowing that they had to get better. And, you know, the Treadwell pick was important, but that was the priority, was improving the offensive line. And I think they feel like strength in numbers, the best guys will win the jobs and their depth will be better as a result, too.
Right. As Matt said, just an amazing amount of experience on that offensive line and also an amazing amount of experience in the coaching staff, not only with the addition, of course, of Tony Sperano, but also Pat Shurmur now, I believe, coaching tight end. So there's, what, four former head coaches on Mike Zimmer's staff. Is that correct?
I think three. But, yeah, you have Norv, you have Sperano,
okay, right.
You have
three.
Shurmur.
Three. Nonetheless, pretty rare. That's pretty interesting stuff.
Right.
And then, Matt, I'll leave you with this. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask one question about the defense, which, again, I think may have as much talent as any in football. And I think when healthy, there's minimal questions in the front seven. They're just simply loaded. I mean, I guess it'll be interesting to see whether Chad Greenway or maybe Emmanuel Lamour is able to kind of hold down that third spot, but we know that's not going to get a ton of play in kind of a sub-package league. But what about in the secondary? What happens opposite Harrison Smith? Obviously, newly re-signed Harrison Smith. Is it Michael Griffin? Is Sendejo in that competition? And can we see a second year where a real high-profile rookie essentially redshirts on defense? What do you think about Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander? And then, of course, the former Bengal, Terrence Newman, who I believe is now 37 years old, his chance of kind of amazingly managing to hold on and still be, you know, kind of still enjoy that longevity.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. This, you're right. I mean, this defense seems poised to be one of the league's best. And, you know, you can make a case that they are doing it without a true superstar. I mean, I personally think Harrison Smith is, you know, a great, great player. And Anthony Barr, if he can stay healthy and stay in the field, looks like he can be a good player. But, you know, they're doing it without a guy like a J.J. Watt type. But they just have so much depth across the board, so much talent. You know, and to the point, as you said, that Trey Waynes, their top pick last year, played sparingly. Mackenzie Alexander, their second-round pick this year, is essentially, you know, going to get a redshirt year behind Captain Munnerlin unless something changes there. So, yeah, they have great depth, and, you know, you asked specifically about the secondary, and, you know, I still think it's going to be, you know, at least with Newman and Waynes, you know, Waynes is going to have to earn it, and, you know, I think he's quite the talent, but Newman doesn't look like he's ready to give it up yet, so that's going to be an interesting thing to see whether, you know, which one of those guys starts, and that's one battle to watch, but there's certainly no lock that they're just going to hand the job to Waynes. And, you know, it looks like Munnerlin will be in the slot, and Rhodes, of course, will be at the other cornerback spot. And, you know, you mentioned the safety spot. Again, it's going to be, you know, that's probably going to be the last position that Zimmer ends up deciding. I mean, that was the case in 2014 and 2015, where we went the whole way to, you know, to pregame warmups of week one to figure out who was going to start at safety last year. So they brought Andrew Sendejo back, but I think the preference would be that he is a backup and a core special teams player. They brought in Michael Griffin on a cheap one-year deal. I don't think there's any real guarantees you know, with him though, I mean, there's a chance he might not even make the team if he just proves to be a poor fit. And then you have some youngsters like Anton Exum and Anthony Harris. So that again looks wide open. That's the one spot that they didn't do a ton to address. But it seems like they also probably feel that's like the lowest priority possible when it comes to their starting defense. So the work around it. But yeah, that's going to be a fun battle to watch again in safety. But yeah, you said they have a ton of talent, ton of depth. And I think they could be poised to take another step forward this year.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch for sure, Matt. And it is a pretty nice luxury to have where you don't have to worry that much about that safety spot opposite a star like Harrison Smith. But, of course, we will be tracking that. And a lot of the other issues that Matt has discussed today as camp approaches, we appreciate it. We hope you are enjoying a little bit of downtime before camp does arrive. And, Matt, we hope to have you on the program again soon. Thanks again for being with us.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. That was Matt Venzel of the Star Tribune. Find him on Twitter at Matt Venzel, V-E-N-S-E-L. Lots of good content there. And as I said, we will definitely be bringing him back sooner than later. So I hope you enjoyed that. We're going to continue our spin around the NFC North here shortly with Justin Rogers of MLive chatting Lions. That will be that and more when we return. Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly podcast and our spin around the NFC North, getting ready to be joined by MLive's Justin Rogers to have a little Lions discussion. But first, we want to acknowledge our excellent sponsor, Loot Crate. With Loot Crate, you get collectibles, apparel, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises delivered right to your door every single month. For less than $20 a month, you get 68 items. Join us as we celebrate the futuristic. We've packed June's crate with items for some of pop culture's favorite prognostications of science and the future. Look toward tomorrow with items from Rick and Morty, Futurama, Star Trek, Mega Man, Valiant Comics, and Star Trek, including a model, a figure, and don't forget our monthly tee and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code SHAW, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off on any new subscription. Loot Crate, come geek out with us. I am pleased to be joined now by Justin Rogers of MLive. We're spinning around the NFC North and getting everyone caught up on all the goings-on around the division, and I thought who better to help us with the Detroit Lions than Justin. How you doing today?
Yeah, road buddies. Why not, instead of just sharing a beer at the Senior Bowl, we can share information over the podcast airwaves.
I like it. As long as we can continue to also hang out in Mobile, that sounds terrific. And Justin, I'll tell you, for the quietest time of the NFL season, it does seem like there has been some interesting Lions news this week. Why don't you get us up to speed? I guess first on the Steven Tulloch release, probably the worst kept secret in the NFL, but that did become official Wednesday. I think we know what the Lions are doing after, you know, life after Tulloch, but just get us quickly up to speed with the departure of really one of the stalwarts in that defense over the past handful of years.
Yeah, what a frustrating story that's been, because Tulloch in February posted on social media basically that he was saying goodbye to the city of Detroit, and then he's lingered on the roster now for almost 5 months. And speculation ran rampant as he collected a $500,000 roster bonus, and I hypothesized a few months back that potentially there was an injury there and they couldn't release him because of the need for a settlement. Well, you know, Tulloch was asked that question a couple weeks ago when he came into town for a book tour and denied it. Well, it turned out that was a lie. Tulloch did have surgery this offseason and did not clear a physical, or did not pass a physical until basically the day he was released. So it was an injury that was keeping him on the roster. The Lions did eat $500,000, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things with how much the cap's raised, isn't that big of a deal. Right. And it clears $5.5 million off the books with his release.
I guess if you've got $20 million for Marvin Jones, what's $500,000 to keep Steven Tulloch on the roster for a couple extra months? Justin, what do you think, though, in terms of did the injury have a relation to him losing his three-down responsibilities last year? Was that more about the ascent of Tahir Whitehead? And what do you think about the Lions' linebacking core without Tulloch this season?
No, I mean, Whitehead really struggled at the onset of last year, and he, you know, lost his I guess, what was presumed to be a starting job early in training camp, and had to earn it back late in the season where he started coming on. You know, Telic, it was more of an age thing. You know, he came back from that knee injury, and, you know, ACLs can be something that lingers beyond the initial season to come back. And he played very well against the run last year. You know, I think he was still superb. He led the team in tackles in that department, but really struggled in coverage, couldn't keep up with tight ends. Never really been his forte anyway, but he went from an average player to a below-average player. And they moved to more coverage linebackers and different packages to kind of compensate for that. So that's where, you know, his role diminished. In terms of this year, they're getting a massive boost back with DeAndre Levy, assuming good health. He's looked like he's been fine in the early practices and the limited portions he's performed. Tahir Whitehead is back. He's going to take over Telic's spot in the middle. That strong side spot's wide open, and the way Bob Quinn, the general manager, described it is it's really only a position that's going to be on the field about 30% of the time. So it's not a mission-critical position, but still, you want a good, solid player in there when you do need him, that those 30% of snaps. And right now, the front-runner for that job is Kyle Van Noy, who was a second-round draft pick. Everybody knows his college credentials. Outstanding playmaker in college, but injuries. He's had a hernia, a sports hernia. He's had a hip injury, two injuries that have completely sapped his production in his first 2 years. He's healthy. He's in what Jim Caldwell is calling the best shape of the young linebacker's life, and he doesn't have a whole lot of stiff competition for that job. So early odds are that he'll win that job.
Interesting. I remember all the hype surrounding Van Noy when he was coming out of BYU, of course, the versatility and the playmaking he was supposed to bring to that defense. And obviously, it hasn't happened yet, but we'll see if it was kind of worth the wait. It's to be determined. We are chatting with Justin Rogers of MLive. If you're not following him on Twitter, you should be at Justin_Rogers. Justin, another interesting story. Interesting is one word. I found some of it to be a little bit disturbing, actually. Calvin Johnson, I don't want to say broke his silence. He never really says much, but kind of talked extensively for the first time regarding his sudden retirement. Also, some injuries and how they kind of plagued his career and maybe were covered up a little bit by the Lions. Kind of a lot to unpack here, but what did you make? And I should preface it. I'm sorry. Thursday night, there will be an E60 ESPN interview with Calvin Johnson where he's going to be discussing a lot of this. We were able to get our hands on some of the quotes yesterday and just your reaction and maybe the Detroit reaction, the local reaction to some of the things Calvin had to say.
You know, I don't think any of this stuff really surprises us anymore in the NFL. And,
right.
You know, maybe 5 years down the road, they've tried to clean up some of it. You know, the one thing that I guess you can say positive about Goodell, if there is anything, is they really have made efforts to clean up the safety of the game. And yeah, it hasn't always gone well. And sometimes they've, you know, looked good on the surface and haven't accomplished their intended goals, but they've made efforts to clean up safety and some of these prescription pills that the Toradols of the world, the injections that the players were getting, I think are slowly being filtered out of the game, or at least to the point where only used in necessity. You know, I think the comment that a lot of people have taken and run with that about Johnson is, you know, the losing helped drive him out of the game. I think it's been taken a little bit out of context, a little bit blown out of proportion. You know, he kind of closed that quote with, you know, I probably still would have made the same decision, even if the Lions were contenders. I think his body was just so beat up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a couple different surgeries on his knees, on his fingers, and, you know, the play was declining. You know, I still think he was a fringe top 10 wide receiver last year, but, you know, I kind of compare it to, like, it's a weird comparison, but Seinfeld. Like, at some point, like, you just got to be comfortable going out on top instead of watching yourself slowly fade away. And when you're a superstar of that magnitude, you don't want to just be a contributor. When you have this massive cap hit, you got to constantly be hearing about the money you're making, and then now you're only catching 75 balls for 800 yards. Like, it's just going to wear on you mentally, the questions, just not the questions from the media or the fans, but the questions you ask yourself. And so I think he just chose the right time to step away for him, his family, his health. You know, and it didn't help that the Lions have been a perennial losing organization. You know, I get the fact that, you know, if you're one step away from the Super Bowl, maybe you bite the bullet and come back for one more year, but they were so far away, and it made the decision easy for him.
I like the Seinfeld comparison. Silly me, I was just going to go with the Barry Sanders route, the Detroit Lions local angle, but I like yours much better. I'll ask you this, and then we'll move on from the Calvin Johnson discussion. I'm sure I won't be the first or last person to ask, is he a Hall of Fame wide receiver?
You know what, to me, my initial reaction is, no doubt. Mm-hmm. And then the more I looked at it, you know, I think it's a little bit more borderline case than I initially had thought. The first ballot he'd be involved in, it's a pretty stacked ballot. I can't remember all the players on it now. It's been a couple months since I've looked, but right. You know, looking less and less like first ballot makes a lot of sense. But I'd have a hard time imagining he doesn't get in there. He did have a nice stretch of dominance of 3 to 5 years. He is, you know, until Julio Jones eclipses that 100 game mark, he's the most prolific in terms of yards per game. Obviously holds the NFL record, and I think it'll probably be broken here in the next few years, but mm-hmm. yards in a single season. And, you know, there's so many just special highlight plays. Yeah, you don't have the team success. You know, that's something that's unfortunate that it holds them back, but right. I don't think we should judge a dominant player on that. It, you know, it's something that can elevate a player that's on the fringe and can maybe bury a player that's on the fringe the other way, but... Mm-hmm. I think he did enough that he'll eventually be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And, you know, it's kind of silly to judge wide receivers by wins and losses anyway, of course. So I think they'll look at the body of work. Eventually, it will be tough on the first ballot, as you mentioned. Of course, Peyton Manning and Charles Woodson, you might as well put them in there now. There's no question they're first ballot guys. But Johnson, I think his time will come for sure. I said I wouldn't ask any more about him, and I guess this isn't directly about Calvin Johnson, but what do the Lions do now? Obviously, Marvin Jones, I took a little dig. I couldn't resist. What'd you think about the Jones signing? What do you think about Eric Ebron's development and Theo Riddick, you know, continuing to chip in the receiving role? Are they going to be okay? I couldn't bring myself to click on the headline last week that the Lions will be tougher to defend without Calvin Johnson. But what do you make of all this and kind of life after him?
It's just a stupid thing to be saying that you're tougher to defend without one of the greatest wide receivers in the yeah. game. Is, you know, could you imagine the Vikings? You know, oh, we don't have Adrian Peterson anymore. We're going to be tougher to defend because, you know, we're not going to be running 50% of the time. Like, come on. But, you know, I do believe the Lions offense will be all right. You know, Marvin Jones signing, I understand why it merits a shrug of the shoulders from the national perspective. I did a lot of digging on him after the fact. I think we can agree that he was one of, if not the best free agent option available.
Yep.
And, you know, arguably at where the Lions were drafting, you know, one of the best options they could have had, period. You know, I went and watched his film, went and watched every single one of his targets from last year just to get a sense of what type of receiver Marvin Jones is. And he's really a do-everything guy. They used him a lot as a deep threat. I was kind of surprised about that. I didn't realize that was a big part of his game, was to be their vertical element in their offense. Got excellent body control and awareness to track deep balls. He works well in the intermediate range. He can make people miss after the catch on those short passes. And I think what you're going to see with the Lions is a passing attack similar, you know, not identical, but similar to what they do in New England. You get a lot of good receivers after the catch. I think, you know, people know about Golden Tate, know about Theo Riddick, but those guys, according to Pro Football Focus, were number one and number two in the league in making tacklers miss in the passing game. So why not just continue to give these guys a little dump-off passes, let them do the work? Matthew Stafford had phenomenal stats last year, especially the second half. Incredible 19-2 touchdown-interception ratio, completed about 70% of his passes. And a lot of that was because he was just dumping it off, and these quick-hitting passes. But, you know, why not if you're going to have efficiency numbers like that?
Right.
So you bring in Jones, who can stretch it if need be. You bring in Ebron, who... you know, should be a mismatch against most linebackers and safeties and should continue to develop as a top 10 talent. And, you know, you're going to have an offense that does that a lot. It's just going to be a lot of, you know, passes at the line of scrimmage, maybe 5 yards beyond, and you let those receivers get the separation and do the damage after the fact.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. We are chatting here with Justin Rogers of M Live, talking Lions, and you can find Justin on Twitter at Justin_Rogers. In the bizarro Matthew Stafford world, and I don't think that 19-2 touchdown interception ratio, when I believe Detroit went 6-2 in the second half last season, probably not sustainable for anyone, much less Matthew Stafford. But wouldn't it kind of just be fitting if he did put together his most consistent year or find a way to pick up where he left off in the second half now that he doesn't have Calvin Johnson? I know he does have Jim Bob Cooter. Everyone's talked about the synergy there. Certainly Jim Caldwell has. Your expectations for Stafford as he kind of ventures into this brave new world?
Yeah, the 19-2 is obviously unsustainable. Can you imagine Matthew Stafford coming out with 38 touchdowns and 4 interceptions in a Johnsonless world? It's just preposterous. But to think that he can't go out and put up like a 30-12 season with 4,000 yards, they're still going to throw a lot. You know, I know they've invested a lot in the run game this offseason, but you know, Amir Abdullah is your lead back, and I like Abdullah. I just don't think of him as a 20-plus carry guy. And you get guys like Steven Ridley and Zach Zenner kind of supplementing that attack. You're going to be throwing the ball a lot. And so Stafford's probably going to still rack up 4,000 yards. And like I said, the closer he keeps it to the line of scrimmage and the less he's attacking downfield, the less mistakes he's going to make. And that's, you know, kind of a hallmark of Jim Caldwell. You know, he likes to keep mistakes at the minimum. If he gets this reputation of as a conservative coach, it's fair in some ways and fair not fair in others. I think he went for fourth down like more than any other coach a couple of years ago. But you know, if you minimize those mistakes by playing conservative football and let the receivers do the work, you know, Stafford could put up a highly efficient season, I think.
We are chatting with Justin Rogers, as you know by now, of course. I've said it about six times. Do you think, and we haven't had you on the program, so I know this is, you know, it's been several months, obviously, but I want to get your take and get it on the podcast. Just your thought on the dynamic between Quinn and Caldwell. We know that more often than not, inheriting a head coach or retaining one that you've inherited doesn't tend to work out. What do you? How long is the leash? And I hate that term, and I just use it anyway. What do you think Quinn's patience will be like with Caldwell if they get off to another rough start? What do you? How do you kind of view that relationship?
Well, assuming Quinn has inherited Bill Belichick's philosophies, then the patience is never going to be great. You know, mm-hmm. the leash is going to be short with everyone, not just Jim Caldwell.
Right.
You know, and they hired Quinn early enough. They moved fairly quickly in the process as the season concluded, and Quinn was not beholden to keep Caldwell. You know, he had every opportunity to fire him, and most coaches available, coordinators that were out there, the top coordinators available, were still on the table. And, you know, if Quinn wanted to make that move, he easily could. I think, you know, they wanted to give Caldwell a chance. One, he led the team to the playoffs in his first year. Two, you have to be at some level impressed with the 6-2 finish. And I know you can take that apart all you want with the schedule lightening up or, you know, the breaks maybe going the Lions' way, but it doesn't matter. It was a 1-7 football team that got pounded in London, embarrassed in London after firing their coordinators. And then they go out and they finish 6-2. And there's something to be said about a team rallying behind their coach and fighting through that. And maybe you want to see where that's going. And really for Quinn, it's a no loss proposition. You know, you give him the 1 year, you see if there's something to it. And if there's nothing, then you move on and you say, well, we tried. Caldwell, I think, is somebody that's very easy to work with. I think he's a good leader. I question at times, obviously, his football acumen, his football decision-making, but as a leader, you know, as a manager of individuals, he does very well, and I imagine he's very easy to work with for Quinn. So the relationship's great, but it's really, to me, it's a one-year trial run.
Yeah, it should be fascinating, and, you know, I didn't really ask much about the defense, so I do want to just get one or two very quick ones in here with Justin Rogers, and then we will cut you loose. Is there one guy... you know, I know there's going to be an interesting safety competition. You already kind of alluded to that third linebacker spot, but maybe one guy, one rookie perhaps even, that caught your eye in the spring that you're most excited to see moving into camp on that defense.
I mean, putting the parameters around it like that, I think it has to be A'shaun Robinson,
Yeah. Second
round draft pick out of Alabama, defensive tackle. And a lot of people projected him to the Lions in the first round and first round in general. And you look at him and you look, why did he drop? Well, a lot of that goes to Alabama's scheme.
Right.
They do a lot of two-gapping. They don't ask their defensive tackle to do a whole lot. So now you're projecting, can these guys come in and fit in a 4-3 attacking one-gap scheme? And you just don't know. I mean, you got to project based on what their skill set says they can do, how they run through drills. Well, listen, the pads aren't on, so it's really tough to put too much stock in it. But Robinson looked really good. He showed great explosion. He was, you know, making plays in the backfield in OTAs and minicamp. And he probably doesn't start off in the starting lineup with Lodi Nada, and I think Tyron Walker will end up earning that other starting spot. But the Lions don't have any long-term security at defensive tackle, and so Robinson offers that. And I think he's going to be a really interesting player to watch. And if he develops well in this first year, it's a big boon for them long-term on that interior.
Yeah, no doubt, especially as, you know, Haloti Ngata gets closer to the end. And, you know, I love the Ashawn Robinson pick at that point. Certainly, I think we at Pro Football Weekly had a top 15 grade on him, so it will be fascinating to track. Anything on contract front? I know Darius Slay is very anxious to get a new deal. Is there anything going on behind the scenes that we may hear about in the next handful of weeks? Or is Slay, or maybe there's someone else I'm not mentioning, kind of going to face a situation where they got to go show it on the field one more time?
Rosenhaus has been in town several times over the last month, and there, a lot of people thought maybe that was tied to the Tulloch situation as well, but you know, knowing now that he was injured, really probably not. You know, I think they've been slowly negotiating with Slay. I think there's still a really good chance that something gets done this offseason, but you've seen these cornerback contracts that are getting done. If they're Slay, if they want him, they're going to have to pay him. They're going to have to pay him big money. You know, it's just the way the cap's going, and you're talking in that $13 to $14 million ballpark, and a lot of people, that's a tough pill to swallow. Because again, you're projecting. Listen, Slay's shown some great skill the last 2 years. He hasn't racked up the interceptions, but he gets his hands on a lot of passes. He's shut down a lot of people. He had a shaky start to last season, but of those 32 games, I would say probably 28 of them, he's looked like a number one cornerback. So they're going to have to pay him, I think, given how long this organization's looked for that guy, that it's a no-brain decision. And I still think there's a reasonable shot that gets done before the start of the regular season.
Good stuff, and I'll get back to where we started, Beer Buddies in Mobile. Miles Killebrew, I understand he has a local IPA already named after him. Of course, the fourth-round safety of the Lions. Have you tried the Miles Killebrew IPA, and does it pack a major punch, and is it filled with hops?
I have not made my way up to try the Killebrew. It sounds delicious. I don't know for certain, but I don't think Miles drinks.
Okay.
You know, he comes from the Utah culture. You know, right. I think he's strong in his faith. And, you know, I made a joke about them not limiting that to 3.2 BAC, which is the the alcohol by volume only allowed in the state of Utah. But, no, it's on the agenda. It sounds, I'm an IPA guy, so it sounds delicious.
Yeah, as am I. Hopefully it's not one of those session IPAs and actually does pack a punch like Killebrew does on the field. Justin, that's going to do it for today. I have a lot more questions, but we are out of time. Thank you so much for chatting Lions. That's Justin Rogers at M Live. One more time, find him on at Justin_Rogers on Twitter. I can speak, I swear. And Justin, I hope to see you at Lions camp in a couple weeks, and we'd love to have you back on the podcast sooner than later.
Yeah, we'll go grab a Killebrew afterward.
Sounds awesome. That's Justin Rogers. Thanks again, my man.
Pleased to be joined now on the Pro Football Weekly podcast by a special guest and a first-time guest. We have the Green Bay Press Gazette's Ryan Wood. Please follow him on Twitter if you're not already at @ByRyanWood. Ryan, how are we doing today?
Hey, doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And before we talk a little bit of Packers and excited to kind of get up to speed on them with you, let's get the important stuff out of the way. I know you were on vacation this week. Tell me something good. Not a lot of good news in the world these days. So tell me you had a lot of fun.
I did. Yeah, we went to the Wisconsin Dells with the family. And for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, early July for the guys that cover the NFL, this is some time to really get family time in before obviously the grind of the season starts. So that's what this past week was, and it was very nice just to have, I've got three kids, just to have everyone together, spend some time with the wife. It was a wonderful week.
Good. I am glad to hear that. And it's a reminder, guys, all our listeners, make sure you hug your loved ones tight, because it's a fragile world we live in, as we all know. But we're not gonna talk about that today. We want to talk about some good stuff. And the Packers, I guess if you ask Packers fans, they might argue last season wasn't quite good enough. Ryan, tell us why this year will be different and the Packers will reclaim their perch atop the NFC North throne.
Well, it starts with health. You know, if this season is going to be different, they'll be healthy. And that's what they didn't have last year. Most infamously, obviously, with Jordy Nelson's torn ACL, and he's back. He's expected to be full go. We'll see. He's 31 years old, so it's no gimme that he can return from an ACL and be the number one elite target that he was for Aaron Rodgers before the knee injury. But that's what they expect. That's what the Packers are counting on this season, that Jordy Nelson will be Jordy Nelson. And if he is, that just changes everything on offense. And suddenly, Randall Cobb's not your number one target. He's got more room to roam underneath it from the slot, something he didn't have last year when defenses shifted their focus to him. Suddenly, there's less pressure on Eddie Lacy. And for all the issues he had last year, being out of shape, not reporting to training camp ready for the season, It didn't help that defenses didn't have to respect the vertical game from Aaron Rodgers. There was no vertical receiver on that Packers receiving core. They were able to stack the box against Eddie Lacy and stop him first. So when you look at it, yes, Jordy Nelson gives them a new dynamic, but it changes the entire offense if he's able to be that player he was. That's the big if he's able to do that. But certainly that's what they're expecting going into the season.
Chatting with Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette, and obviously a good place to start. Everyone likes to talk about the loss of Jordy Nelson last year, what it meant. I was foolish, apparently, because last offseason I felt like if there was any team in the league that might be able to weather, and granted, you know, Jordy Nelson, top five wide receiver in the NFL, but anyone that might be able to weather that type of injury, I thought it was the Packers with their depth, with exciting guys like, you know, Ty Montgomery and Davante Adams, Jared Aberderis, all these guys. Everyone talks about the health of Nelson, but we don't talk a lot about, I know Adams struggled through a lot of injuries. Montgomery's season ended prematurely due to injuries. Jared Aberderis, sadly, is kind of a walking injury. So what's the situation with those other guys and maybe expectations behind the kind of usual suspects in Nelson and Cobb?
Well, first of all, you weren't alone. I was the same way. I think everyone thought that if there was an offense, and not just an offense, but a quarterback that could weather that kind of storm, it would be Aaron Rodgers' offense. And obviously, it just didn't happen like that. There were other injuries. You know, Ty Montgomery really showed promising flashes early in his rookie season. Just caught a touchdown the week before. Was becoming a bigger role in that offense, and then he had an ankle injury that, at the time, I remember Ian Rappaport, right after the injury, that it was going into the bye week, and he had reported that he's going to be good to go. There's a chance he could be good to go by coming out of the bye week against Denver, and then he just had setback after setback, two or three, that delayed his return, and eventually they needed to get surgery that ended his rookie season. So he's been, you know, that jump from year one to year two is so important for these guys, especially a receiver. He hasn't been able to do anything this offseason. He'll be ready to go for training camp, but he hasn't been able to do anything this offseason. But that'll be interesting to see how that affects his development. Davante Adams had really, I think, a crisis of confidence last year. Once he started dropping passes, it just seemed to snowball on him. He did have some minor injuries and, you know, played through the, you know, an ankle and those sort of things. But really, he was good to go. I think the biggest issue he had was confidence. And frankly, when you look at Davante Adams being thrust into a role as a number one perimeter target after Jordy Nelson went down, as a second-year guy, I don't think he was ready for that type of responsibility, and it showed. I think he benefits from Jordy Nelson coming back because now he's that number three option. He's that guy that doesn't have to shoulder the passing game, put it on his back. I think that's going to help him out a lot. So it'll be interesting to see with these young guys. It'll be interesting to see how many receivers they keep. Theoretically, they could keep as many as seven receivers. It's going to be a very intense position battle going into training camp.
Yeah, and it seems like it has been for several years. Obviously, Ted Thompson not shy about drafting at the position. And obviously, 2 years ago, the former seventh rounder, who I know has become a bit of a cult hero there. I think we do have some listeners, you know, Packers fans among our listeners. So I do want to ask quickly about Jeff Janis. How is his route running looking? Did it look in the spring? Everything I've heard is that is what held him back last year, his ability to get on the field and having an opportunity to make more plays.
Yeah, for Jeff Janis, it's all about getting Aaron Rodgers' trust, and he's been very open and honest about that, and he certainly understands what he has to do in order to get more passes thrown his way. He understands that he's got to get his quarterback's trust. You know, he had a good organized team activity period, got valuable reps with Aaron Rodgers on the practice field, and then Aaron Rodgers, along with 14 other veterans, were not at minicamp because they have an extended preseason with the fifth preseason game, the Hall of Fame game. Mike McCarthy decided to give his top 15 veterans the mini camp off. They're still getting more workload. But I wonder how that affects a guy like Jeff Janis, who needs all the practice reps that he can get with Aaron Rodgers, especially in the offseason. To not get that during mini camp, it'll be very interesting. Obviously, again, five preseason games. He has plenty of time to show what he can do. And has really showed the physical flashes, the speed, the size, the strength, the things that everyone knows he has. It's just a matter of getting on the same page with his quarterback, which he's not been able to do yet. And so it's going to be a very critical preseason for him along those regards.
And along those lines, just to kind of complete the Packers pass catching core discussion, and we'll move on and talk about a couple other issues. What about Jared Cook and in his absence due to foot surgery, I believe, this offseason? What's the concern both internally and, I don't know, among Packers fans? And B, what about losing out on that time to also develop a rapport with a new quarterback and far and away the best one he's ever had a chance to work with?
Well, that's the question, really, because physically, for everything I've been told, it's not a significant thing. In fact, right after the surgery, I was told that if it was October, if he had a game Sunday, he could have played through it. It's just the fact that it was June, there was no game for a few months. Might as well go ahead and take care of it in the offseason. Got some time for surgeries, obviously. But the bigger question is, how does that affect his rapport with the quarterback? Because as we just said with Jeff Janis, any receiver, any target, he's got to be on the same page with number 12. He's got to be a guy that has Aaron Rodgers' trust. I do expect Jared Cook to have an easier time of it because he is a veteran. He's going into his eighth season. He's a guy that has played a lot of football. He's not Jeff Janis, who came from Saginaw Valley State and had to make that transition to then the Green Bay Packers, the NFL. That's a big transition for any guy to make. So I think his veteran experience with Jared Cook is going to be beneficial for that. But certainly that heightens the importance of preseason, because you didn't get a lot of the offseason to work with your new quarterback. The preseason is going to be very important for Jared Cook and Aaron Rodgers.
And say they have a strong preseason, and it looks like that chemistry is building. Where should the expectations be? Athletically, he looks like JaMychal Finley. I mean, he has a lot of those similarities in his ability to do damage after the catch. I know that's probably a played-out comparison because that's the guy he's trying to sort of replicate, what the Packers have been missing in that offense. But is it fair to expect that type of an impact? Is it fair to think maybe Cook can come in and do what Ted Thompson's last big free agent signing, Julius Peppers, did, have that type of an effect on the team?
You know, he does look the part, and that, I think, is the one thing that really showed during the time he was healthy at OTAs. And for anyone that sees these OTA practices, maybe the only thing tangibly that you can really gain from this is guys' athleticism. How do they move on a football field? Jared Cook, as far as that goes, without the pads, without the physicality of the game, he certainly athletically looked the part. It'll be the other parts of this game. You know, his hands have come into question from time to time throughout his career. Can he hold on to the football? His blocking is obviously something that has never been much refined. So those areas of the game. But what they need from that position is a guy that stretches the field down the seam vertically, that opposing DBs have to respect deep. And that's what he should be able to give this offense, that position specifically. I look at 50 catches, 600 yards, 5 touchdowns. He's never been a big touchdown guy, so I wouldn't expect that to change. But certainly, you know, a 12-yard per catch average, that type of benchmark, I think those are certainly where you start. And then how much over that he exceeds is the question. But between him and Richard Rodgers, they've kind of got the complete package at tight end now. Richard Rodgers, although he's not much of a blocker either, is more of a possession guy, a red zone threat, things that Jared Cook throughout his career have not been. Richard Rodgers obviously does not have the speed, and that's where Jared Cook is expected to really complement this passing game, especially in the middle of the field. So we'll see how that plays out, but that's what they're hoping, is that he kind of gives them a shot of athleticism that they just didn't have at the position before.
Spending a few more minutes chatting with the Green Bay Press Gazette's Ryan Wood. If you're not following him on Twitter, you'll want to head over there and go to @byRyanWood. All kinds of great Packers knowledge there. Talking defense, turning the page here quickly. What do you think? There's a trio of intriguing rookies. I think a few of them expected to play early roles. Well, I don't know about early roles. You tell me. I know you can't really glean much from these defensive linemen, a nose tackle in shorts and no pads, but Kenny Clark, do you like the early impressions you've seen? And then where is this linebacking core at? What are Blake Martinez's opportunities, or is this Sam Barrington coming back from injury, the guy who's going to pair with Jake Ryan early on?
Yeah, well, let's start with the first rounder, Kenny Clark out of UCLA. He's a guy that they are hoping will be a plug-and-replace starter at nose tackle for the retired B.J. Raji. That's why they drafted him at 27th overall. We'll see once they get the pads on in preseason where he's at in terms of the physicality and making that adjustment from college to pro. But they certainly expect him to be able to go, if not day one, day two. I mean, it's literally right away. That's what their expectation is. And it'll be a journey to watch him transition this preseason. As far as Blake Martinez, you hate to put this on a fourth-round pick, but he's probably the most important draft pick out of the entire seven-member crop that they got last April. Mm-hmm. Just because if he's able to come in and fill that nickel linebacker position that they really need, that guy that can cover on third down, that moves Clay Matthews outside. That moves your best edge rusher outside. And what have we seen in the NFL lately? What do we see from the Denver Broncos this February? Edge rushing wins titles. It's that important. Behind quarterback, the number two most important thing on football field is how do you rush the quarterback from the edge? If they're able to get Clay Matthews back outside, that changes the dynamics of this defense. And for them to do that, they're really going to need Blake Martinez to be that guy who covers, you know, running backs, tight ends, covers in third and long and passing situations, plays well in space, and then also plays dime linebacker. And so that's going to be the role that he's expected to fill as soon as he can. Historically, in Dom Capers' defenses, rookie linebackers don't play right away. It took Jake Ryan, who had a very good rookie season, until week 13 to actually get his first start last year. They don't play right away, so it'll be interesting to see how quickly he gets on the field. But I do think that he benefited from having Sam Barrington still recovering from the foot injury that cost him 15 games last year. Blake Martinez and Jake Ryan took first-team reps exclusively with each other through OTAs, through minicamp. That can only help a rookie in terms of his learning curve. So I would expect that maybe that learning curve is a little smoother for him because of the head start he was able to get. But certainly when preseason games begin, that's something to keep an eye on.
And, you know, Dayton Jones is a guy who obviously is entering a pretty big season. I believe the Packers decided not to pick up that fifth-year option, and I believe he's picking up where he left off late last season, playing more on his feet. Just fill us in quickly on that position switch and maybe just the depth at outside linebacker. I was a little surprised to see Nick Perry and not Mike Neal be the guy to return. Kind of break down that position, and we'll let you run after that.
Yeah, well, I think they like what they saw from Nick Perry in the playoffs last year. I think that, you know, he had 3.5 sacks in the postseason, showed some flashes. His thing is he's just never been healthy throughout his career. He's had aching injuries and those sort of things that have kind of lingered and followed him. They're hoping that they can get a little bit more pass rush that they got in the postseason, and then he is the better run defender, sets an edge better than Mike Neal. That's what kind of went behind that decision there. As far as the Tone Jones, he's a guy that if you stand him up, you put him in a two-point stance, they're hoping that athletically they can maximize what he brings to the table a little bit better. He's always had kind of shorter arms for a five-tech defensive end, which is where he was drafted to play. He kind of got swallowed up by offensive tackles. On the outside, playing more of a nine-tech, he's able to use his athleticism a little bit more, and really he played his best football of his career late last season after making that switch. So they're hoping that continues. But certainly it looked like last season he found a home as that elephant rusher, as that guy that played a little bit wider on the edge and stood up in that two-point stance. So another critical offseason for him because he's still making that transition to full-time, and he's going to be an outside linebacker full-time for the first time in his career. So that'll be interesting to track as well.
Ryan, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Whose division is this? It's kind of funny to me. I believe in the old adage, you have to knock off the champ before it's someone else. I feel like a lot of people are kind of anointing the Packers past the Vikings even before that happens. What do you anticipate happening this season?
Well, I think it's the Packers division so long as they have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. So long as they have an MVP at quarterback, they're going to be expected to not just win the NFC North every year, they're going to be expected to win the NFC every year. And they haven't been able to do that. That's why there's been disappointment in Green Bay. That's why last year was so disappointing, because not only did they not get to the Super Bowl, but they didn't win the division. But that doesn't change the fact that they've got the best player, the best quarterback at that position in this division. And so long as they do, so long as it's Aaron Rodgers' team, they're going to be the expected favorites.
There you have it, listeners. Awesome stuff from the Green Bay Press Gazette's Ryan Wood. We really appreciate you coming on today, Ryan. We hope you'll join us again before too long.
Hey, no problem. Anytime, guys. Take care.
All right. Thanks again. That was Ryan Wood from the Green Bay Press Gazette. All kinds of great stuff there. And that's going to wrap our NFC North discussion.
That's going to do it for this week's Pro Football Weekly podcast. We hope you enjoyed our spin around the NFC North. And surely we hope you'll be back with us next week as we preview another division for you. One more time, I need to thank MLive's Justin Rogers and the Star Tribune's Matt Venzel, as well as the Green Bay Press Gazette's Ryan Wood. All great stuff on the NFC North this week. I have to thank our sponsor Loot Crate, of course. A huge thank you to our producer Dan Mott, and the biggest thanks of all to our listeners. That's you. We appreciate you being with us. We can't wait to be back with you next week for Arthur Arkush and Pro Football Weekly. Have a good day.